Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast of Hemingway blaxploitation. Do you remember blaxploitation films? What a weird thing. Blaxploitation. That is such a weird thing to have existed. Karenin is angry. Eek. Part 7, Chapter 18. Charolette said, "Whether Oblonsky was anti-Semitic or just joking around, it felt anti-Semitic to me. When he says that he, Prince Oblonsky, a descendant of Rurik, was waiting 2 hours in a Jew's waiting room, I think he was indignant that a Jew kept him waiting because he looks down on Jews. I think Russia as a whole was pretty anti-Semitic at that time. The fact that the word he used was a pejorative in the original only makes it more clear. I really feel for Karenin in this chapter. I would be mad at him, since I believe in no-fault divorce, but people should want the marriage for it to continue. But I learned from this sub that the laws in Russia mean, in order to divorce, one or both of them must give up contact with Sirza and be prohibited from marrying again. I honestly can't believe that he previously agreed to be the one to admit fault, and I don't blame him for wanting to walk back on it now." Blonsky has a good point that Anna took him at his word and moved to Moscow expecting the divorce, but really, it's too big a sacrifice to expect of him, given that Anna is the one who cheated. Ivan Norwegian said, "The Jewish guy Oblonsky met was based on a real guy, a railway magnate, responsible for building a quarter of the railways in Russia at the time. And given just how big Russia is, that's a lot of railways. If the guy was just a fat Russian, I'm sure Oblonsky would spend a couple of hours thinking up fat jokes instead. That being said, I have no idea what Tolstoy thought about Jews. But it's not that long ago that Michael on The Office said that he doesn't call retarded people retards, only his friends when they act retarded. That would not fly today. So things around pejoratives change fast." Alex says magnanimity has cooled off, apparently. I think, yeah, it has changed fast, hasn't it? That has changed fast. Even the movie The Hangover, which is not that old, has all kinds of things you can't say anymore. And they're so funny. They were so funny. Man. Now, they're off the table. They're out of bounds. It appears, says Swims to the Mama Fishy, that Tolstoy thought very highly of the Jews. And there's What is a Jew? Written by Count Leo Tolstoy. Toasty. Toasty. I wouldn't mind a toasty. Oh, God. I'm not going to read what Tolstoy thought of Jews in 1891 right now, because I'm just not feeling it. Not that interested. He liked them, apparently. Thermos of Beer says, oh, my God, this is a long comment. This is longer than the chapter. And also the comment starts by saying this doesn't have anything to do with today's chapter. You know what? I think I won't read it because it's very long and it's also not anything to do with the chapter. It's an Abraham Lincoln comment about Tolstoy. Okay. Oh, God. No, I'm not going to read it. Still, looks interesting. There's a quote by Abraham Lincoln, about Tolstoy. I'm really, really tired. I can barely talk properly. So let's read a chapter and move on with our days. Regroup tomorrow. Do it all again with hopefully more energy. Oblonsky, this is chapter 19. Oblonsky was just leaving when Corny entered and announced Sergei Alexeyevich. "Who is Sergei Alexeyevich?" Oblonsky was about to ask, but immediately recollected. "Oh, Sirza," he said. "Sergei Alexeyevich. Why, I thought it was the director of the department. And he remembered it was the director of... He remembered that Anna had asked him to see the boy. He recalled the timid, pathetic look with which Anna, at parting from him, had said, "Anyhow, you will see him, find out everything, where he is, who is with him. And, Steva, if it is possible, isn't it possible?" He had understood what "if it is possible" meant. It meant if it is possible to arrange the divorce so that she should have her son. But now Oblonsky saw that it was useless even to think of that. He was, however, glad to see his nephew. Karenin reminded his brother-in-law that they never mentioned his mother to the boy, and asked him not to say a word about her. "He was very ill after that unexpected interview with his mother," remarked Karenin. We even feared for his life, but sensible treatment and sea bathing in the summer have restored his health, and now, on doctor's advice, I send him to school. The influence of his schoolfellows has really had a good effect on him, and he is quite well and learns well." "Hullo! What a fine fellow. True enough, it's not little Sirza now, but a complete Sergei Alexeyevich," said Oblonsky, smiling as he looked at a handsome boy in a blue jacket and long trousers who entered the room boldly and confidently. The lad looked healthy and bright. He bowed to his uncle as to a stranger, but recognizing him, he blushed and turned away from him quickly, as if offended and angry about something. The boy came up to his father and handed him his school report. "Well, that's pretty good," said his father. "You may go now." "He has grown thin and tall, and is no longer a child, but a regular boy," said Oblonsky. "I like it. Do you remember me?" The boy glanced swiftly at his father. "I do, Mon Okul," he answered. "Mon Okul," looking at his uncle, and then again lowering his eyes. His uncle called him nearer and took his hand. "Well, how are things?" said he, wishing to start a conversation, but not knowing what to say. The boy, blushing and not answering, gently withdrew his hand from his uncle's grasp. As soon as Oblonsky released it, after a questioning glance at his father, he hastily left the room like a bird let out of its cage. A year had passed since Sirza last saw his mother. Since then he had not heard any more of her. During this year he had been sent to school and had learned to know his schoolmates and to like them. The dreams and memories of his mother, which after their interview had made him ill, no longer occupied him. When they rose in his memory, he took pains to drive them away, considering them shameful and fit only for girls, but not for a boy and a chum. He knew that his father and mother had had a quarrel which separated them, knew that it was his fate to remain with his father, and he tried to accustom himself to that thought. He felt uncomfortable at meeting his uncle, who resembled his mother, because it awakened those very memories which he considered shameful. It was the more disagreeable because from some words he had overheard while waiting outside the study door, and especially from his father's and uncle's faces, he guessed that they had been talking about his mother. And in order not to blame the father with whom he lived and upon whom he depended, and above all not to give away to the sensibility which he considered so degrading, Sirza tried not to look at that uncle who had come to upset his peace of mind, and not to think of what was called to mind by the sight of him. But when Oblonsky, who had come out after him, saw him on the stairs, and called him and asked how he spent his time between lessons at school, Sirza, in his father's absence, got into conversation with him. "We play at railways now," he said, answering the question. "You see, it's this way. Two sit down on a form. They are passengers. One stands on the same form. The others all harness themselves to it. They may do it with their hands or their belts, and then off they go through all the rooms. The doors are opened beforehand. It's not easy to be the guard." "That's the one who stands up?" asked Oblonsky with a smile. "Yes. It needs courage and quickness, especially if they stop suddenly or if somebody falls down." "Yes, that's no joke," said Oblonsky, looking sadly into those animated eyes like the mother's, an infant's eyes, no longer altogether innocent. And in spite of his promise to Karenin, he could not refrain from speaking of Anna. "Do you remember your mother?" he suddenly asked. "No, I don't," hurriedly replied Sirza, and blushing scarlet, he hung down his head. His uncle could get nothing more out of him. Half an hour later, the Slav tutor found his pupil on the stairs, and for a long while could not make out whether he was in a temper or was simply crying. "I expect you hurt yourself when you fell down," said the tutor. "I told you it was a dangerous game. I shall have to tell your headmaster about it." "If I had hurt myself, no one would have known it. That is quite certain." "Well, then, what is it?" "Leave me alone. If I do remember, or if I don't, what business is it of his?" "Why should I remember? Leave me alone," said he, now addressing not his tutor, but the world in general. Alrighty, there we go. Another chapter down. Have your say about this chapter on the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening. See you tomorrow.